Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable. Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake. A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Welcome back to episode 129 of The Last Round, and we all know why you clicked. That's right. You want to hear Chris One-Shot Lovejoy. You want to hear that interview. Well, you're going to have to wait, unless you want to just fast forward. Obviously, you can fast forward and find it, the interview with Chris One-Shot Lovejoy, who actually fights this weekend, I believe, against Manuel Char, is a little later in this episode, but as we get going into the fight previews, we'll introduce that interview that Mike did earlier today. But first off, let's go back to this past Saturday, the 8th of May, from the AT&T Stadium, where the Dallas Cowboys play. In Arlington, Texas, on DAZN, Saul Canelo Alvarez stops Billy Joe Saunders, who actually retired in the 8th round. And Alvarez is now the WBC, WBA, and WBO, and Ring Magazine super middleweight champion of the world. Mike, before we dissect the final round of this matchup, and how, you know, I guess if you want to call it controversy that is surrounding Billy Joe and how the fight ended and all that stuff, let's talk about the actual performance between both of them. What'd you think of Canelo, and what'd you think of Billy Joe before that very last round, especially?
Canelo just really proved again how good he is, you know, and it kind of just goes to show there's only, you know, very few fighters that do what he does. You know, he wins, and then it's next man up. Who's the next best available opponent? You know, he may take the odd soft touch here and there. You know, obviously Avni Yildirim was a mandatory. You know, Rocky Fielding was obviously a weight above just to pick up a strap. But, you know, it just goes to show that some fighters really need to look at what he's doing and the incredible legacy that he's setting. You know, I think he's convinced everybody now. You know, if he had a period of time where, you know, people just didn't like him because he dropped the WBC title and wouldn't face Triple G. And then we had the Clem Buterol storm that came around, and he was obviously suspended for a period of time. But, you know, pushing that aside, he's probably up there with Floyd Mayweather in, you know, mine and your era, you know, since we've been old enough to really watch boxing, he really is up there with the best. And it's just great to see that he just goes on and fights the best. And, you know, hopefully now with, you know, him being more happy with, it looks like, Matchroom Promotions compared to Golden Boy, the change in him is unbelievable. You know, you can see his humor, he's singing, he's dancing, he's doing interviews in English. And I think that's just kind of widened his appeal to, you know, more of the English-speaking fans in the US, in the UK, Australia. You can relate to him more. You can see how funny he is. You know, he's not as robotic and kind of dismissive as, you know, what I think we thought he was, you know, which kind of came across as maybe slight arrogance. But yeah, unbelievable performance. He actually kind of picked those rounds, I believe. I think he said he was going to get him out there, and I think it was 7, 8, and 9. And, you know, he did after the 8th. Good performance from him. I thought Billy Joe started slowly. I thought, you know, if you were going to use the fast twitch boxing from the outside, I thought he would have to have put rounds in the bank early on because, you know, everyone said that he was probably going to start the fight 3 or 4 rounds down. So you needed to get in there really and, you know, throw as much as you can, dance as much as you can, move as much as you can, and pick up a few rounds. And, you know, I thought he actually started kind of slowly until Canelo kind of slowed down and kind of let him into the fight, you know, I think around 5, round 6. And Canelo kind of, it was like he was drawing him in, like, hey, you know, I've got tired. Just kind of make, you know, Billy Joe kind of relax, you know, and it worked. It worked, you know, because every time he landed, it was with bad intentions. And you could just see, I think it was round 7, that just Billy Joe's body language had changed. I think those shots he was taking round the torso were just kind of taking its toll. And then obviously just that beautifully timed uppercut, you know, Billy Joe was heading down. His hand was coming up in a perfect storm, like a car crash. He went straight into it. And I assume you're going to move on to the injury in a second.
Yeah. I mean, we'll touch on that in a second. But I do want to, you know, kind of give my take on the whole thing. I thought Canelo was in control the entire fight. I know there was some, I guess, controversy after the fight about the scores. Some people, you know, were kind of going back and forth, especially on Boxing Twitter, about, you know, which rounds did Billy Joe win? Who was winning on the scorecards when the fight was stopped? You know, did Billy Joe deserve all those rounds? Was he leading? I believe what started that kind of firestorm was Chris Mannix's card, who I guess was the unofficial scorer for DAZN, who had Billy Joe up at that point. I guess let me pose the question to you like this, because it's not that Billy Joe wasn't landing. He was landing. He just wasn't landing with any effectiveness. There was no aggression behind his punches, but he was landing. He was landing, and obviously you should score those on points. But it was a matter of time, like you mentioned earlier, how Canelo was hitting those, especially going to the body, into like the hip area and stuff like that. Canelo was just landing with force, like every single time. So in my opinion, I felt like every one shot that Canelo would land would be like maybe three or four shots that Billy Joe was landing, in terms of maybe like effectiveness, if that makes sense. So my question to you is, because, you know, judges obviously watching boxing, the hardcore boxing fans, our listeners and everybody else, when you're watching a fight, there's always multiple ways to score a fight. Judges look at different things. Sometimes people say that they're influenced by the audience, by the loudness and all that stuff. Sometimes they look at who the aggressor is, or who's scoring the points, who's actually making contact, regardless if it's effective aggression or not. Like a Billy Joe Saunders in this fight, or who's having more impact behind their punches, like Canelo did in this fight. So, I mean, in your opinion, what's the right way to score a fight like that? Because this is actually a perfect fight to talk about in terms of that situation, because, okay, do you give it to Billy Joe Saunders in terms of some of the rounds, you know, stuff like that? Because, like I said, he was landing. There was no effectiveness behind him, so he obviously wasn't affecting Canelo enough, not even close to enough, to get Canelo off his back. But he was landing. There was scoring. He should have got points for landing on Canelo, but Canelo's, going back to what I keep saying, Canelo's punches just kept, you know, they were just so powerful. You can hear, you know, being ringside, I'm sure it just sounded like gunshots, and, you know, in a sense. So what is the right way to score a fight like that? Is it a combination of both? Is it, you know, who lands more regardless of the effectiveness or the power behind them that actually affects your opponent in terms of, you know, durability?
I think you summed it up well. And I think Andy Clark, when in one of our previous, I think one of the first times he was on, when he was kind of telling us about, you know, doing some of the unofficial scoring and what he'd been told by, you know, experienced referees and experienced judges on how to score a fight, was he kind of imagines them with, you know, like a Mortal Kombat or Street Fighter type, like energy bar above their head. You know, and like you said, you know, if you hit them like with a jab, or you're just kind of touching them, you're not taking much of that energy bar off. But if you're landing
like a video game.
Exactly. But if you're landing like Canelo was, you know, you're losing a good, you know, probably like a third of that energy bar. So those five or six little tappy tap shots from Billy Joe, just to kind of keep people at bay, they're not taking anything off. And then when Canelo's coming in with those big body shots, you know, he's taking a huge chunk of that energy bar down. So, you know, I agree. I think that is one of the problems that we have is, you know, you know, when the commentators talk about fights, you know, they'll say like, hey, you know, hey, Danny, how do you have it scored? And, you know, it's all onto people's perception of what they like. If they like someone who's busy, like Chris Mannix obviously likes people that try to push the fight, people that throw punches, and that's the way that he had Billy Joe Saunders up. But in terms of, you know, what how much energy that's taken away from Canelo, not a lot, because he's just tapping him from the outside just to keep him moving, just to keep himself busy, just to try and keep Canelo at bay, to keep him thinking. But, you know, when Canelo was landing, he was, you know, he was doing some bad business. There were bad intentions and they were taking a lot out of Billy Joe, and he just slowly but surely wound him down. And, you know, he, like when he fought Kovalev, it was a very similar performance where he wasn't bothered about losing the rounds because he was probably down when he fought Kovalev. But he knew that he was going to come. He knew in those later rounds, he was going to catch him and he was going to get him out of there.
See, with the Kovalev fight, kind of if you can compare it to the Kovalev fight, Kovalev really surprised me in a bad way, if that's how you want to describe it, because Kovalev relied on the jab a lot. He was trying to box him the whole fight. And we've seen, I know Kovalev of, you know, now wasn't the Kovalev of 2015, 2014, 2013 and all that stuff. But, you know, it wasn't like the guy didn't have any power. You know, he still had power, and like maybe he was just intimidated. Like he just didn't want to engage with Canelo because he knew like, hey, if I put my might and my power behind these punches, he's going to come at me too. He's going to engage and I'm going to get hit and I'm going to get hurt. With Kovalev, that surprised me that he didn't really engage, like really thrust his power into any of his shots. With Billy Joe, it didn't surprise me because Billy Joe's never been that type of fighter. I mean, what is he? Like, he has 14 KOs out of how many fights?
It was like 50%, yeah.
Right, right. So, I mean, you know, if you compare it to other fighters, especially in the higher weight classes like that, that's not a lot. So it wasn't surprising how he was fighting, especially in the first, you know, 5-6 rounds or something. I think, and I agree what you said. I think Canelo kind of let him in the middle rounds to kind of, you know, let him in so he can find openings. Like, okay, is it fair to say that Canelo possibly did it on purpose to make Billy Joe Saunders believe that has openings, so Canelo can take those openings and neutralize them? I mean, is that fair to say, or are we going to get shit for that?
No, I would 100% agree with you. I think now, you know, the body of work we've seen from Canelo over these last few fights, the evolution of, you know, just how good he is with his defense, with how confident he is in his own abilities, that he'll give up rounds and let Billy Joe Saunders come into the fight to the point where he lets Billy Joe Saunders grow in confidence to, like you said, create those openings to the body that time and time again were just paying off. And, you know, even though he's had so many fights and he's still, you know, fairly young, I think he's still getting better. Because that was, looking at the way that he fights, I think everybody thought, not he wasn't necessarily going to lose, but this was going to be a very difficult fight because of the fact from his body of work before, you know, people that move and box were hard for him because of the way he fights. He has to shut the ring down, corner them, you know, and tee off and, you know, break them down. You know, and we thought it was going to be a bit of a struggle. You know, we both said he was going to win, but we thought he'd struggle. I didn't think he struggled at all. I think the only rounds that he lost were the rounds he gave up.
Right, right. I mean, yeah, I don't think he struggled at all. I think he was in control the entire fight. People might disagree with that and say, no, there was moments where Billy Joe connected on him and he was, you know, he was getting the better of him and stuff like that. If that's true, which, yeah, you know, I could possibly agree with that. Maybe there was one or two rounds in there where Billy Joe did win the rounds based on, you know, connect percentages, but it doesn't mean he was in control of the fight. Like that whole time, the ring general throughout those 8 rounds was Canelo Alvarez. He was the general of that ring. So, I mean, even if Canelo never landed that shot, now we're kind of transitioning to the final shot, the final round here. He never landed that uppercut. Like you said, there was a perfect storm. That's a good way to describe how that shot was. It was a perfect storm. I believe Billy Joe came and lunged forward with like a a sweeping right hand, like a right hook, and Canelo kind of ducked under it, and Billy Joe kind of, his body weight obviously came around like it was like a helicopter, and then he came down because his body was coming forward, and then he bends down, and then Canelo timed him. Canelo timed him. I think he saw when he ducked under that punch, he knew where he was going. So as soon as he saw him move, he timed him and he got him, and he got him with that that nasty uppercut that obviously fractured his orbital bone and his eye socket, I believe, in multiple places. It's a really bad injury. But it, in terms of boxing and a timing and like the effectiveness of a punch, that's as good as you can get in boxing for landing on your opponent like that. That was a sweet punch. And I knew you could see it soon as he landed it, especially when they zoomed in on Billy Joe's eye. I believe it was his right eye. Am I wrong? Or was it his left eye?
No, it was his right eye. Yeah.
His right eye, right? Especially when the camera zoomed in on his face, especially when he was in the corner at the end of the eighth round, it was already closing. It was close. You can see it on, like, if you watch that part of the fight, you can see it close, just completely shut. Like you're watching in real time, that eye just shut. That's it. It's gone. And then they're trying to get it open, and they're trying to help it out. Kind of now going on to the whole, how the fight ended. There's obviously a big narrative right now, like, oh, Billy Joe quit. And then a lot of fans saying he didn't quit, he needs to protect himself. So my theory is that the reason why this is getting so much attention and everything, and you tell me if you agree with that or not, is because obviously Billy Joe Saunders is a character. He talks a lot. Would this be different? And I'm asking you this, would this be different if Billy Joe Saunders was like, let's just say who's a quiet person who just fights, like maybe like a Jose Ramirez or something like that. And then
Nonito Donaire
or something like that. If they were in the same position, they got hit in the eye and they end the fight or they retire in the corner or what have you. How would it be different in terms of somebody who obviously has the mouth and talks the way Billy Joe Saunders does? And one thing that kind of came back to bite him and is still biting him, even in the days following the fight, is that video he did, I think on his social media, criticizing Daniel Dubois in the Joe Joyce fight. It's stuff like that that is having people. I mean, I've seen a couple tweets in boxing Twitter, and more than actually a couple, saying they were just like, because he was talking all that smack is why I say he's a quitter. I've seen that. So it's more of like an emotional thing. And obviously people who watch fights, especially boxing, MMA too, but boxing with all its history behind it, we've seen this before where these fighters have their eyes just messed up. They're shut, just messed up eyes. It happened to Eric Morales. And they keep fighting. So people, respect that. They see that. And then they love blood and guts. They love the blood and the glory. People want to see that, it's entertainment to them. But, we look at more like who do you remember Israel Vasquez? He had a really, obviously a bad time in boxing. I think he has a glass eye now. What happened?
Michael Bisping.
Bisping. Same thing. So, I mean, what can you really say? Kell Brook's never been the same after that. Those fights against Triple G and Errol Spence, especially the Triple G fight, he's never been the same. I mean, and people always say what his career could have been if he never took that Triple G fight. And it's true. I mean, where would he be right now? After, if he never took that Triple G fight, you never know. So if you want to use the word quit, I guess, but it doesn't mean it's like a negative connotation. It, it, But it's just because his mouth is what's getting him in trouble because of that. It's because of all the smack talk that he does. And at first, I thought the doctor stopped it. I thought the doctor stopped it, but then they were reporting that it was actually his coroner. Am I right? It wasn't the doctor who stopped it, right?
It looked like it may have been in real time, because I think it looked like Mark Tibbs kind of spoke to Billy, and then I think they called him over, and the referee obviously, you know, spoke to him and looked at how swollen the eye was, and I think he kind of asked him, like, can you see? And then as soon as he said no, it looked like the doctor stopped it. But, you know, regardless, you know, Mark Tibbs said it was down to him, so, you know, maybe it was him. But going to the, you know, the question about him quitting, for me, I don't think, like, if the eye was just swollen, you know, if it was just a swollen eye and there was no damage underneath, no broken bones and stuff like that, then yeah, I would have said that, you know, that's him quitting, because fighters get swollen eyes, you know, every single fight. So the fact that he had like a fracture and, you know, his, you know, fractured cheek and, you know, the orbital bone was also cracked, then no, I don't, that's not quitting, because, you know, he's got an injury that could be, you know, career threatening.
We don't even know if he's going to ever be the same again.
Yeah, you know, it's not only is it, you know, maybe career threatening, it could be, you know, his eyesight for the rest of his life. Look at, you know, like we touched on, like Michael Bisping, you know, he gave his eye to become a world champion in the UFC. And from now on, he has a glass eye, same as Israel Vasquez. I believe he has a glass eye. If, you know, it's a very tough sport. It's a very short career. You need to get in and get out, because boxing probably takes a lot more from fighters than it gives. And people need to understand that. So, but going to what you said, I do believe the fact that he talks so much shit, the fact that he kind of plays the villain, the fact that he, you know, did that interview with the Mexican media, and he was kind of saying, telling him that his breath smells and stuff like that. You know, that didn't go down too well. You know, he has very childish, immature humor that he seems to find funny, that is obviously very distasteful, because it's normally, he's kind of...
Some people are entertained by it, though. That's the thing.
I mean, some people are entertained, but a lot of the time, his humor is, you know, he's really humiliating somebody, you know. Someone is the victim to this. It's not just like in jest, you know, like something that's kind of humorous, like a joke. So I was kind of very surprised when IFL TV put that video up, that, you know, they was humiliating the Mexican media for ESPN, I think it was. But, you know, each to their own. So stuff like that, yeah, I can understand. That's why people wait for him to lose, wait for him to do something so they can jump on him. You know, because at the time he was obviously undefeated and stuff like that. And with all the stuff that he does, people were always waiting to jump on him and pull him down because of the villain kind of persona that he has. He's very love-hate, isn't he? Have that.
Well, yeah, it's like a good, it's like professional wrestling. It's like the good guy versus the bad guy. You know, the fans are accustomed to rooting for the good guy, in a sense, and you want the bad guy to be beaten. It's just like all those years with Floyd Mayweather, you know, playing the villain role on the Showtime All Access shows, HBO 24/7 interviews and stuff like that, television shows. He knew that. And how many people, I wish there was like studies behind it, but how many people tuned in to watch him that weren't even boxing fans, but they watched him because they're just like, he was a mainstream star, and they wanted to see him lose. They wanted to see if he'd lose, you know, like they wanted to see the villain get dethroned, and it never happened. It's a really bad injury. He underwent surgery there in the Arlington, Dallas area. I believe he's still there. He's supposed to be there for a couple weeks, especially with COVID protocols and all that stuff. So I'm sure in a couple weeks we'll hear a lot more. You know, an update on his status and all that. But yeah, I mean, imagine if he came out for the ninth round. Just imagine that. And with the injury that he has, you know, multiple fractures, you know, his orbital bone supposed to be like just cracked, gone. You know, imagine that. And then Canelo just goes after that one spot. you know, I think we would have saw his face sink in. I mean, you know how crazy that would have been on TV? Like, in not even if it just because it's on TV, but just in general seeing that. But, you know, like, it's going back to what I said earlier, boxing fans, especially hardcore boxing fans, are so accustomed to seeing these warriors get these eye injuries, these really bad eye injuries, the swelling just really bad, and still come out and fight. And then people just like, they're like, oh yeah, that's why I respect this guy. This guy's awesome and stuff. But, you know, like you said, Michael Bisping, Israel Vasquez and stuff like that, Kell Brook, you know, they were never the same, and it's long-term effects. I mean, you know, so like you said, if it was just, I agree with you. If it was just like swelling, if it was just swelling and he just got tagged with a good one and it just kind of started swelling up, I could see the criticism. But his face was smashed in, multiple fractures, like I said. And the reason he's gained a bunch of shit from everybody is because of his mouth. It is what it is, you know? So, but then that's the beauty of boxing. That's the beauty of boxing, because it gives us stuff to talk about every week. You know, it is what it is. I mean, you know, this fight, I mean, Canelo's fought Avni Yildirim, Rocky Fielding, Callum Smith. Who else am I missing? Who else am I missing that he's fought on DAZN?
On DAZN, Jacobs.
Daniel Jacobs and stuff like that. I mean, would it be fair to say that this fight against Billy Joe Saunders has probably got the most attention? They obviously sold out. They set the indoor boxing attendance record with like 73,000 people in the United States. But is it fair to say that this fight, out of the fights that he's had on DAZN since he's been with DAZN, has gotten the most attention and the most, you know, I guess, good guy versus bad guy, villain, hero, in a sense? Would you categorize it like that?
Yeah, I would have said so, because I think, you know, both sides of the pond, obviously the UK with Billy Joe being, you know, well-known in the UK, and then I think the fact of, you know, him threatening to pull out because of the ring size, you know, generated a little bit more hype of fight week, because, you know, that was like Tuesday, I think. You know, yeah, they were already threatening to leave and fly home. So, I would say so. I would say that was probably the biggest hype. And then, you know, due to the fact of fans being back, you know, ringside obviously made it a huge event as well due to COVID.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would say so.
And then, obviously, Canelo, some people say he called out Caleb Plant. He didn't really call out Caleb Plant. Chris Mannix asked him. Caleb Plant has the other piece of the super middleweight championship, the IBF title. Is that who you want next? And Canelo's like, yeah, that's the plan. He didn't say, yeah, I want Caleb Plant. He just said, yeah, that's the plan. You know, we'll try to make it. And people, you know, I saw some articles or some pieces written like Canelo calls out Caleb Plant. Like, well, he didn't really. He just kind of said, well, yeah, that's the plan. Like, I want the title. You know, like, that's pretty much what he's saying. Tell me if you agree on this or not, or disagree. Is Caleb Plant better than Billy Joe Saunders, or vice versa?
Very similar styles.
I think Billy Joe's better, honestly.
I would probably go with Billy Joe being better. I mean, very, very similar style. Both of them haven't really fought anybody.
Right.
You know, I think, looking back, if I was Billy Joe, and with the amount of people talk about the boxing IQ and the natural talent that he had, unfortunately, I believe if he retires now due to that unfortunate injury, you know, I think he's wasted his career.
Possibly. Maybe. He made the highest payday this with this fight.
I know people are going to say, how can you say that with him, you know, being a two-weight world champion, you know, middleweight and super middleweight, both the WBO. Who did he beat to win him?
And this is coming from a UK guy, too.
I couldn't even tell you the name of the guy for the super middleweight where he won it in Stevenage outside at the football stadium. I can't even tell you the guy's name.
That's true. I forgot. Yeah, that's true. I mean, it is what it is. You know, hopefully he recovers and, you know, everything turns out well in the recovery process and he comes back. I mean, but boxing history tells us that when you get an injury like that, you're never really the same.
$8 million he got for that.
Reportedly. But
Mike Coppinger, so it's gospel.
Well, if we talk about like all these reported numbers and stuff, like The Athletic reported for the Andy Ruiz and Chris Arreola pay-per-view, it was like 150,000, in excess of like 130,000 pay-per-view buys. But then Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer newsletter, who does mostly professional wrestling stories, but he also reports on like MMA and boxing ratings and pay-per-views. He reported that Ruiz Arreola did 35,000 pay-per-view buys. So like, that's a very, very big discrepancy. You know, sometimes we see reports from different people, like, you know, with a good reputation, reputable history, report like different numbers, but they're close enough where you can say, oh, okay, well, I can see like it's somewhere in there, but it's still close enough where you're just kind of like, you don't question it. Well, that's something you have to question. Who's right here? You know, who really is right? Like, where did you get your numbers? Where did he get it? Like, where did Coppinger get his numbers? Where did Meltzer get his numbers? Cause that's a story that I want people to follow up on. Cause that, like, I think that's big news. Like, cause then it's like, okay, well, we hear the pay-per-view numbers from these one or two guys every single time, you know, are they wrong? You know, cause that's a big discrepancy. Cause 35,000 to 150,000 is a big difference. It's a big difference.
Five times.
Yeah. So
five times larger. So
I don't know. But Canelo, I guess this was the last fight on his two fight deal with Matchroom. But I think he's actually said in prior interviews that he still wants to work with Eddie Hearn. So wherever he goes, he's gonna have Eddie Hearn there. I think he's already said that. And you gotta give props to Eddie Hearn. He's really delivering for this guy, for Canelo Alvarez, in terms of these events. Putting these entrances for him, setting up these like little, if you watch like the behind the scenes Matchroom footage, they set up like a little golf course, so golf putt in the back and all this other stuff. Like, he really is rolling out the red carpet for him every single time, which he should be, because he's like, okay, he's a free agent, I want him to stay with me because he has all these options. And I mean, I can tell you that, you know, being Mexican American, I was watching it with my Mexican family, obviously. And when Canelo, during his entrance, they were all about it, man. They were all about it. They loved it. They loved it. They loved the culture inspired performances and everything. It hyped people up. They were all about it. So, I mean, I think they're going to try to make the Plant fight, but you know, I think Plant, it's also a good thing for Plant because it kind of puts him in the financial front seat, because he's like, okay, well, obviously I'm the only guy he wants. Do you expect him to price himself out?
No, he won't price himself out. I mean, that would be his biggest ever payday for his entire career.
Right.
But when you fight Canelo, it's one of those things where you just say, yes, sir. When? Right. Yeah, that date, yes, sir. You know, you just take it because... You know, Billy Joe Saunderson reportedly got around $8 million for that fight. So,
yeah,
life-changing money.
Yeah, absolutely. And then real quick, Andrade obviously got the most attention of his career in regards to being associated with Canelo in the post-fight press conference. I thought that was pretty interesting. But hey, he's getting talked about. This is the most attention he's got. So it worked out in the publicity standpoint. So, but we'll talk about that as the weeks come and what, you know, whatever else develops. Also on that card, Elwin Soto gets the 10th round stoppage, over Katsunari Takayama, the legend Takayama, for the WBO light flyweight title. This was also a controversial fight. Soto was winning the fight. You know, he was in control of the fight, but Takayama was fighting back. It didn't look like he was ever like being, I wouldn't say dominated in a sense, I guess, but I thought it was funny when they stop the fight and then Takayama goes in the middle of the ring and starts shadow boxing, and everybody starts cheering like, yeah, like, cause he was showing like, I can still go. Why'd you stop the fight? What'd you think of the matchup?
Yeah. I'll be 100% honest. And then I'm not going to change it. When he stopped it at the time, I was like, oh, okay. Like, cause he was taking some clean shots to the head. You could see his head was kind of getting tagged back a little bit. You know, I think in hindsight, maybe it was a little bit early because, you know, he shadow boxed and he showed he still had a lot in the tank and stuff like that. But you know, I think the referee was just more concerned about, you know, he was taking some flush punches to the head. You know, Takayama was kind of throwing back, but he didn't really have much on the end of his punches. And I think that's why Sato was able to kind of get up close and was kind of teeing off with the harder shots. You know, right. There's no denying he was throwing back, but Takayama, there wasn't anything behind them, in my opinion. So, you know, the referee, maybe it was a little bit early. Maybe he should have let it gone a little bit longer.
But you're right, though. I agree with you saying. I don't disagree with the stoppage. I see why it was stopped. It doesn't bother me.
From where I was, you know, just watching it on DAZN, I wasn't, you know, kind of like so shocked where I was like, what the hell?
Yeah. It was an entertaining fight, though.
It was a good fight.
I liked it.
Maybe roll it back, give Takayama another payday because of how controversial the stoppage was.
And the people obviously liked him.
Yeah, that doing the little showboating thing at the end to show
that was actually pretty cool. Yeah, that was cool. That was cool. A little entertainment.
He won some fans over, I think, by doing that.
Yeah. Also on the cards, Suleiman Sissoko gets the split decision win over Kieran Conway for the WBO Intercontinental Super Welterweight title. This had some action too. Conway was, at least on the cards, obviously some judges were giving him rounds, but if you watch during the fight, Conway was actually losing the fight and then he drops Sissoko. What'd you think of the matchup?
For a while you'd been hearing about Sissoko. I think he signed with AJ's management team. He moved over here and he's been training with Virgil Hunter. I didn't think he was that good. I didn't at all, with the amateur pedigree that he had and all the talking behind the scenes about, you know, him coming through, supposed to be this next superstar. I thought some of the fundamentals were terrible. His jab, he dropped the hand that should have been protecting his chin the whole time. At times, he looked like a little bit scared and lost, like he didn't, like he'd throw like a 1-2-3, and then he kind of looked like he didn't really know much else. Like he kind of was fairly new to the sport. But, you know, I thought Conway did well because he'd come as the B-side. He dropped him. I think it was at the 8th round, around there. And I don't know if he just couldn't pounce on him and get him out of there. I don't know if he didn't have enough in his gas tank, or maybe he thought he was doing better on the cards.
I think he thought he was doing better on the cards.
Yeah, because he should have really just jumped at him and realized, you know what, I'm the B side. I'm just going to empty the tank and try and get him out of there. Because Sissoko was gone, and it was very odd as well because he kind of caught him and Sissoko went down like holding his face, like, you know, something you never really see from a boxer, because he like grabbed both hands round of his head and I was like, looks like something like really drastic had happened to him. And then he just got up.
That's what I thought too. Yeah.
I don't know if Sissoko's, from that performance and from his reaction from getting dropped, I don't think Sissoko's going to live up to what people say he is.
I mean, unless he comes out in the next fight and really, you know, improves on that.
I think he's maybe a good amateur, but I think as a pro, I don't think he likes getting hit.
Yeah, because I thought the same thing when he went down and he had kind of covered his face. And I was like, oh, wow, I wonder what happened.
He was crying.
Yeah, I was like, I wonder what happened. And then he got up and I was like, oh, what was that about?
Oh, very odd.
Yeah, it was strange. But we'll see. You know, he, like you said, he is under Anthony Joshua's management team. So I'm sure he'll get another opportunity in the future and on another pretty decent sized card. Could be on an AJ card. You never know. You never go AJ Fury. You never know. Never know. Moving on. Keyshawn Davis gets the 6th round unanimous decision win over Jose Antonio Meza. What'd you think about Davis's unanimous decision win?
Great. I think he's going to be a great fighter.
He's a good fighter. Yeah. I liked him.
Very good. Gene's very professional, talks well, very calm. You could see that, you know, he doesn't want to rush things. Just very good. Just very, very, very experienced for somebody who's only 22 years old, you know. Doesn't seem to be fazed by being on big cards. Doesn't rush his work and try and blow everybody out in the first round. Surrounded himself by, you know, a whole range of great, you know, boxers, you know, Terence Crawford, amongst others. So, I think he's going to be outstanding.
Right, yeah. And he was supposed to go. His plan was to go to the Olympics in Tokyo. And there was, you know, I read some stuff that people thought he had a pretty good chance at winning the gold, or at least kind of getting to the final matchup, but he turned pro instead. I'm sure the pandemic had a lot to do with it. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of fighters who turned pro instead of going to the Olympics because of the pandemic, which sucks. But you know, it gives us more opportunities to see them on the big stage. So, you know, but I like you, like you said, yeah, I like him. I think he's a good fighter. Based on that, this last fight this past Saturday on the Canelo card, I think he's got a lot of potential, and hopefully he keeps going from there. Another prospect who's still making his rounds, now in his third fight, all three fights being on a Canelo undercard, Mark Castro, Fresno, California, gets the fourth round TKO over Irving Macias Castillo. Castro, actually, Davis, they asked Davis about fighting Mark Castro because they were both on the card and they're both, you know, 3-0, and they're kind of both progressing kind of in a similar fashion in terms of time frame. Keyshawn Davis said he was open to it. He said, yeah, let's do it. I think if you put both of them together, even right now, I think Davis beats him.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, in terms of this fight with Castro and Castillo, I liked it. I think Castro, from his first two fights, he showed a lot of aggression. His first fight, you can tell he was nervous. You know, he has some nerves there. The second fight, he was a little bit more calm. He was kind of relying on his boxing ability, being more patient. This one, he just came out of the gate and, you know, tried to start throwing power shots and trying to get him out of there. He obviously did stop him, but you could tell he was just like, I'm going to get this guy out of here. I mean, what'd you think?
Yeah, you know, he looks like a good prospect. He's 3-0 and 3 KOs, and all three of his, you know, performances so far have been on the undercards of Canelo. So Matchroom obviously like him. To be fighting somebody that's 9-2 in only your third fight as well is pretty, you know, pretty impressive. I thought he did well. Like you said, he kind of tried to jump on him, maybe catch him cold and get him out of there. I think he kind of blew himself out after the first round and then kind of slowed down for the second, third, and obviously got him out of there in the fourth round. I think I've said it before. The only thing I worry about for Castro is, I mean, maybe it's just because I'm slightly older. I just worry about him, you know, turning to social media too much and, you know, kind of going down that celebrity route more than concentrating on his boxing. Obviously, I don't know him that well. Maybe he does both extremely well and he trains very, very hard.
That's what at this moment, I think he does. I think he does both extremely well.
Yeah.
I think if you want to compare it to obviously the guy who's around his age, Brian Garcia just had this extreme level of fame thrown at him so fast that he didn't know what to do with it. Castro isn't even near that fame yet. You know, he's, as long as he keeps progressing how he is, you know, slowly but surely, and gets more fame as he goes on. And if he keeps winning, I think that he's okay. You know, but if he gets that kind of in your face fame from overnight fame, that's what you kind of have to look out for. But I think he's okay right now. I think he's disciplined enough, especially because I think he goes to Fresno State University too. So I think they're saying he's studying there. So, you know, that's impressive, you know, that he's trying to get his degree and he's a professional boxer fighting on Canelo cards. So he strikes me as a kid that he's pretty disciplined all around. But, you know, I like him. He's been on the show before. We've interviewed him before. We've seen him in Phoenix during Chavez Jacobs fight week and the fight and the day after the fight, actually in the fight hotel. I think that was the day when he, you know, gave a handshake agreement to Eddie Hearn saying, I think he was going to sign with him. Cause I think a couple weeks later is when they announced his signage, his signing. So, but we'll see, but you know, he's going to be back on if Canelo fights Caleb Plant, whoever he fights next, he's going to be right back in. Well, I'm assuming so. I mean, maybe not. If Canelo strikes a deal, if the fight isn't on DAZN, he might not be on the card, but you never know. You never know. Moving on, fight previews, what everybody's been waiting for this entire episode. This upcoming Saturday, the 15th of May, from the Box Gym in the country of Germany. Manuel Char, 31-4, comes back from a four-year layoff or retirement. I don't know what you want to call it. And goes up against the most wanted man, Christopher One Shot Lovejoy. And like we mentioned at the beginning of the episode, Mike did speak to Christopher Lovejoy earlier today. You know, kind of set up the interview for us, Mike. What should we expect here?
I spoke to Chris. He's over in Germany just preparing. You know, it's fight week. we kind of touched on what's been happening since last time we spoke. We spoke, you know, during fight camp when he was supposed to fight with Dave Allen. So, you know, Chris just gives us really an update from what's happened in his life from, you know, since then all the way up to now.
All the way up to now. All right. So here's the interview that Mike conducted earlier today with Christopher One Shot Lovejoy.
And now, it's time for the last round interview of the week.
Christopher One Shot Lovejoy. Chris, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Thanks for having me. Can you hear me? Everything good?
Yeah, everything's good. You sound good. Obviously, you're over in Germany, so it's about, what, midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, so we'll jump straight into it. You came on last year just during fight camp, just before you were supposed to fight Dave Allen until, you know, Don King got involved and put a stop to all of that. So if you can just give us a rundown of what's been happening, you know, in your career since then.
Well, as you just said, what happened last October, October 31st, my fight got stopped. So immediately from that situation, when I left London, I went straight to Miami to go try and get out of this contract with Don King, like whatever I got to do. I knew it was going to be due to expire May 4th this year, which was last week. But I don't want to wait. You know, I don't want to have any issues. I don't want him to try to prolong the contract with COVID or blah, 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 blah. So I tried to make an offer, you know, to buy out of the contract. He wanted a certain amount of money. I didn't have it. I came up with half that money. I bought my own plane ticket. This is after I left Miami. I went back to California. I bought my own plane ticket, bought a room, got a rental car. Arranged a meeting with him. I offered him half of that money, which was, he wanted $15,000. So I came up with $7,000. I talked to a friend, let him know what I was trying to do. And he told me to bring the other half. He'll meet me in Miami, and we can do it. I went to Miami. My other guy didn't show up. So I was $8,000 short. And Don King said he couldn't take the money. You know, he tried to offer me another fight and said we're going to make some money, blah, blah, blah. Things just didn't work out. And he wouldn't give me a release. So I either had to wait till May 4th when it expired, which I knew when May 4th came, it was going to be a bunch of BS. So I talked to some other people, some attorneys, and they advised me to file for bankruptcy. That was the only way to get out of the contract. So I had to file bankruptcy. And that's what I did. And that was the only way I got out of the contract. That was the only way I could even get a fight. You know, promoters wouldn't talk to me because they was all disgusted about what happened in London. You know, me going way over there, they wasted their travel money and everything. And the fight never happened. So I reached out to every promoter, you know. All the big promoters, hey, listen, I just filed bankruptcy. I need to fight. What's up? You know, some of them said, okay, and send me over your bankruptcy paperwork. And some of them said, they get back to me. And they all reached out, but I was trying to go fast. And the first, within like a week, I got a fight. Within like a couple of weeks of me filing bankruptcy, I got a fight. And this is the first people who responded. And that's how I got it. That's how I'm here. So, This all happened maybe over the last month or so. First offer I got, I jumped on it. Because I knew I was going to be coming out of my contract, you know, so I was already kind of training, getting some sparring in. And I figured by mid-May, I'll be out anyway, which this bankruptcy is going to expedite that process. So that's what I did.
I think I'm right in saying that since the with Cha, Don King has come out, hasn't he, saying that this fight shouldn't be going ahead. Is he trying to put a stop to it?
I guess he tried to. You know, I don't know how he did because they covered all their tracks before they even sent out a contract and before they even reached out to me and booked plane tickets and flights and stuff like that. So, you know, I don't know. You know, it has nothing to do with me. You know, I'm no longer in a contract with him. But like my lawyer and the other lawyer had advised these promoters here, anyone can send out letters, you know. He doesn't have a valid contract with me no more anyway, and let alone any expiration dates. My bankruptcy has been discharged, and he was a major debtor on that bankruptcy. So it's over with.
Looking forward to the fight this Saturday. How's training camp been going?
Everything is good. Staying consistent. You know, I'm here. I got facilities here I can use. I got boxing gym. I got fitness center. So everything is good. I'm feeling good, staying loose. You know, I'm about 4 days out, so I'm feeling good. I'm about at where I need to be at.
How did you like Germany?
Germany's pretty cool. It's kind of the same as the UK to me, as far as the people. Everyone's nice, you know, when you meet them. The bubble here is a little different. I'm able to go certain places I couldn't go when I was in London, so I like to get to see people and meet certain people and see certain places that I couldn't see when I was in London. So it's pretty cool.
You kind of cooked up a bit of a storm early on by not shaking, you know, Manuel Char's hand.
Yeah, man, I just put a video up on my YouTube about it. I was explaining to him, like, man, it is what it is, bro. You know, we're not friends, you know. My thought process is different than your thought process. You know, we ain't got to be friends.
It seems to have cooked up a bit of a storm with the German fans, because I see you've put on a few, you know, screenshots of them sliding into the DMs, giving you abuse.
Yeah. They're going to do that. But like I say, they don't know where I'm from. They don't know what type of cloth I'm cut from. They don't know what I'm about. So, you know, they used to everyone being nice and cordial and respectful and all that stuff. And I'm not with none of that. You know, you're not my friend, bro. So we ain't got to be cool. Now, after the fight, we can shake hands and be cool. And but, you know, you're in my space. You know what I'm saying? You're in my territory. So I'm not going to let you butter me up and think we cool. You know, and then you come try and knock my head off. That doesn't even add up. That's all fake to me.
Turning the attentions to the fight, what is the game plan? Obviously, you're kind of known as someone that just doesn't really take people around, so you're looking for another knockout?
Definitely looking for a knockout. I've watched this guy a few of his fights. He starts off late, which is a plus for me. He don't want to start off late with me because I'm going to be in attack mode. So I'm looking to apply some pressure on him and see what type of heat he can take.
Are you looking to try and start fast? Because I think he's been out in the ring for about 4 years.
You say, am I looking to start fast?
Yeah.
Definitely. I'm a bluff caller. I want to see what you got. You know, I want to see what kind of chin you got. I want to see what kind of heart you got. We're going to start off a little brawl immediately when a bell ring, just to see what you got. You know, when you do customary boxing, just regular boxing, you jab contests, move around, everyone fill each other out. That's making it fair. You know, we don't want to make it fair. I'm going to make you fight. This is a brawl. It's a county jail fight. What you going to do? So that's how we got to do it.
After you win this fight and obviously get your hands on a part of the WBA World Championship, who are you looking for? Tyson Fury, Anthony Joshua?
Those are the obvious big names I want. But the realistic names I want to get at Joe Joyce. Probably like a Fabio Warley and a big baby Miller. He should be off suspension soon. That's the fight that I've been wanting. Him and Joe Joyce are the main fights I've been wanting for the last couple of years. And those are the fights that I still want.
Obviously, your friend Dave Allen has decided to come back. Is that someone you're going to look at? Because obviously you've got unfinished business, right?
100%. You know, I don't know how serious he is. I don't know what he's going through mentally. You know, I don't know if he's actually coming back or not. But, you know, when I come back, I'm trying to get a fight immediately. You know, he doesn't seem like he's trying to get a fight immediately. You know, so, and my excuses were I had contract issues. He don't have no contract issues. So I don't know what he's waiting for. You know, I don't know if he's just for publicity. You know, he seems like he's trying to post things to get people to boost up his ego. You know, he might be mentally down. So I don't know if he's actually ready to hop in a boxing ring that fast. You know, he got something else going on. You know, stuff that women go through, he seemed like he's going through that kind of stuff. Like stuff my mama used to go through. He seemed like he's going through that stuff, you know?
You'd be willing
to... I don't let that outside world, you know, affect what I got going on in the boxing ring.
You'd be willing to come back to the UK, though, to fight him?
100%. You know, I'm thinking about coming to the UK after this fight. You know, just to shake up the crowd a little bit, you know? I want to go to their gyms. Are things off lockdown out there yet, you know?
A lot of things. There's not 100%, not as obviously as good as the US, but all my family still live back home and they're kind of still on a little mini lockdown. Like, you know, not everything's 100% capacity yet.
Okay. Yeah, I definitely want to. I got to go check it out.
It looks like the Anthony Joshua Tyson Fury fight has been announced for August the 14th. Obviously, that's your division. How do you see that one going?
Is it the 14th or is it possibly the 7th?
Either or. I don't think it's official, but I think Mike Coppin posted the 14th, so either or.
man, that could be a good fight. You know, they've both been out the ring so long. It depends on who's going to be more sharper, who's going to be more mentally prepared, you know. I've always had Tyson Fury as a favorite, you know, just because I've been in the ring with him and I've seen what he can do. And I just got to give him a slight edge. But it's heavyweight boxing. I mean, I'm not taking that away from Joshua. I mean, he's a champion, you know. He got all the rest of the belts. You know, he's up there. I think he's number one. But I just think that Fury might edge him a little bit. You know, I think I would give Fury the edge. If I'm betting on it, I would bet on Fury. Like I said, you just never know. It's 50-50 fight to me. That's just my pick.
No, exactly. Obviously, in the heavyweight division, just like your nickname, it only takes one shot.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. All right, Chris, I appreciate you giving us your time, obviously, over in Germany. I think it's about 1 o'clock in the morning, so I appreciate you jumping on with me. If you want to just tell people where they can find you on social media and where they can find the fight in the UK and in the US.
I got my handle back on Instagram. All one word, Christopher Lovejoy. I'm on Twitter. Lovejoy Boxing. Obviously, Christopher Lovejoy is just too many characters. That's where I'm at mostly. I'm on Instagram. Whenever I get out of the gym, to the gym, wake up, go to sleep, Instagram. I'm feeding back with all the fans and talking to everybody. I'm on Twitter a little bit. I got a YouTube channel, too. I need some more subscribers. The link is in my bio for Twitter and Instagram. So, yeah, I'm just working, man. Everything's cool. I'm here. You know where to find me.
Where can we find the fight in the U.S. and in the U.K.?
I think you got to go to ecboxing.com. This is the promoter, EC Boxing here. EC, E as in egg, C as in champion. I don't know. You got to go to their website. They're going to post it. But definitely when I get the link, I'll post it up so everybody can tune in.
Awesome, Chris. I appreciate your time and good luck for the fight on Saturday.
Hey, man, that whole Don King thing that he was talking about, how he had to, you know, a lawyer advised him to commit to file for bankruptcy. That's wild, man. I mean, what was your reaction when he told you that?
Well, I think you probably got the email as well. There was an email a few weeks ago from, you know, Don King Promotions kind of saying that, you know, if it was true that Char was supposed to fight Lovejoy, he's under contract and, you know, that Don King was going to get involved. So, you know, I think we'll kind of all believe it, you know, that Don King's, you know, taking this and, you know, when the bell goes for the first round come Saturday. So, you know, just interesting that, you know, even now, 2021, Don King is still around the heavyweight division and still has some kind of pull.
His name's still being mentioned. He's still there. Hey, I mean, if we thought he was going to fight Dave Allen last year and it didn't work, Don King figured out a way to stop the fight. Don King still says that he's under contract and he's, you know, he can't fight or whatever unless Don King authorizes it. We're still a couple of days away from the weekend from Saturday's event. It could happen again. It could happen again. So you never know. Don King finds ways to get what he wants, but who knows? Who knows? But we appreciate Christopher Lovejoy for talking to us here on the last round. Second time he was on the show, so we appreciate it. I'm sure we'll talk to him again in the future. Moving on from the Dignity Health Sports Park in Carson, California, on Showtime, formerly the StubHub Center, formerly the Home Depot Center, Brandon Figueroa, 21-0-1, goes up against Lewis Neary, 31-0, the undefeated Lewis Neary for the WBC and WBA Super Bantamweight title. I think I'm looking forward to this fight. I think this is one of those fights that I wouldn't say it's going to, it's a hardcore boxing fans fight, right? I mean, what do you think about the matchup?
Great matchup. You know, Lewis Neary kind of just walks your opponents down heavy handed. Brandon Figueroa, really the complete opposite, mixes it up a little bit, gets in and out really quick. Throws lots of combinations, throws lots and lots of punches. So it should be a great fight, and I would go with Lewis Neary maybe getting the win, but the problem about Lewis is his biggest battle is always with the scales.
That's exactly what I was going to say. And when we get past Friday, if he makes weight, then we should know what kind of fight we're going to get.
If he makes weight and doesn't look like he struggled, doesn't look all gaunt or anything like that, I would go with the Lewis Neary stoppage. I think he's just so heavy-handed. You know, Brandon Figueroa is good. Really, really great to watch. You know, if you're a bit of a casual and you're listening to this and you're thinking, you know, what's a good fight to watch this weekend? this is the fight of the weekend, I would say.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Like I said, this is a hardcore boxing fans kind of fight. I'm going with Brandon Figueroa, man. It's not that I disagree with your assessment of Neary and that he's more heavy-handed. I just think Figueroa, he has to redeem his brother, who just lost, like, you know, within the last couple of weeks. You know, he has to come back and redeem his brother and get a win for his family. So I'm going with Figueroa just to keep it interesting. But like you said, it's a good fight. It's a good boxing fans fight.
And it's kind of like, I don't know, you got like the superhero, you know, Brandon Figueroa, the heartbreak kid, the good looks. Like
Shawn Michaels.
Does nothing wrong against kind of like Lewis Neary, the villain. You know, I think he's been banned before for performance enhancing.
Oh, yeah.
Missed weight plenty of times. He's actually banned from fighting in Japan because he missed
so many
times.
Yeah.
He actually banned him from fighting in the country. So, yeah, you know, there's a good ways to look at it. And definitely, you know, going to be the fight of the weekend. So now that we've said that, it'll probably be terrible.
Yeah, probably. We're hyping it up too much. We hope we're right, but... You know, when you hype something up so much, it's just your expectations are really hard to hit. Also on the card, Danny, the babyface assassin, Roman Thompson, boxing protege, returns and goes up against Ricardo Espinoza Franco. I'm hoping Roman kind of gets back in a title contention and really gets a title shot. I like him. I think he's a great fighter, and he's one of those guys that like had some early losses, but he came back, worked harder, and started winning and became a unified champ. And then obviously he lost the title in Miami to MJ on Super Bowl week in 2020. But it's not like he got dominated in a sense. He was still in the fight, but he did lose the fight. I'm a fan, man. I'm a fan, maybe because he's a local guy. You know, he's a local guy here in Southern California. But I hope he gets back to a world title shot because I'm a fan of the guy. I think he's a great fighter. What do you think about this matchup?
It's a good return for you know, Danny Roman, somebody that's, you know, really done boxing the hard way. He's never been like really like the big A side. He went over to Japan to win his world titles and then didn't really take any easy defenses. Was in there with, you know, Gavin McDonald, TJ Dahini. Then he went in with MJ. So, yeah, he's you know, they've really thrown him to the wolves. And, you know, he's never really been one of those A-side guys. It's been wrapped in cotton wool and he's just been the cash cow. So, you know, it'd be good to see him come back, just get himself a victory. And then, you know, that's a very strong division. So there's a lot of good names in there and a lot of local guys as well, you know, local to us. So, you know, have a few battles in Southern California, especially at the Dignity Health and Sports Park. When we're allowed back in.
Whatever it's called over there. Moving on from the Manchester Arena in Manchester on DAZN, Joshua Buatsi, 13-0, goes up against Daniel Blenda Dos Santos for the WBA International Light Heavyweight title. Break this fight down for us.
It's a terrible, terrible fight.
What?
It should have been headlined by, you know, Terry Harper trying to unify against Choi, but Terry Harper had a hand injury, so he got postponed last minute. Joshua Buatsi against Santos has kind of moved up to the headliner. Terrible, really. You know, Joshua Buatsi came, you know, into the pros of all of this hype, and they seem to be moving him so slowly. I understand he's moved over to, you know, Virgil Hunter to be trained over here, but still, you know, he's fighting a guy that's like 15-0. Most of the people he's fought had losing records. This is not the sort of fight he should be having for his 14th fight. You know, even fight someone at British level or, you know, European.
I mean, who would you realistically put him against right now in his career at 13-0? Like, who do you see?
I don't know whether they'd want to do it, but if Buatsi's as good as he, you know, everyone says he is and all that sort of stuff, Hosea Burton.
Okay.
British level fight. You know, Hosea Burton was just in one of those tournaments, the Golden Contract, was it? So why not get him in there? Hosea Burton struggles to get fights because of the style that he has. So, you know, it's a payday for him. It's a good fight for him. You know, if he gets in there, he's just beaten Joshua Buatsi, kind of one of the faces of Matchroom going forward because of the amateur pedigree that he has. And everyone's very, very high on him. I know Buatsi had a very tough fight last time out, maybe the change of trainer as well. But like we kind of spoke about, you know, some people need to realize that just get in there, fight the big guys, and, you know, take those tests. Teofimo Lopez did it. Canelo does it all the time. Especially with COVID, I thought these type of fights have stopped. You know, that's what they kept saying. There's no more tickovers. There's no more easy fights. This is a stupidly easy fight for him. Stupidly easy. It's a waste of time. It's probably the worst matchroom card I have ever seen.
Really? That's terrible. A pretty big statement.
It's absolutely terrible. Most of them are just one-sided fights. There's only a couple of fights on there where you're kind of like, okay, that's, you know, it's a decent little dust-up, a little British-level fight. But, yeah, I would go as far as it's up there with one of the worst in modern times that I can think of.
Eddie Hearn has a lot of stock in Buatsi too, huh? Like you said, he's kind of the, if you want to call him the future of Matchroom, he pretty much is. I mean, from the interviews that Eddie Hearn's done, I feel like that's what it is.
That's why I feel that they should be pushing him a little bit more. You know, he has kind of, you know, stagnated. I know he had a few injuries and stuff like that, change of trainer, but you know, push him. If he's going to be that good, then we need to, you know, get him out there. You know, do the usual route: English, British, Commonwealth. Pick up the European international fights. Work your way up into, you know, into the light heavyweight division. Look at the other week; we had just had Bivol in there with Craig Richards. Craig Richards isn't you know, right, an A star, an A star potential fighter that they're gonna hang, you know, the Matchroom's company on. You know, with what they are with Buatsi. You know, he's. He looks good. He talks good. His performances in the amateurs have been good. And they just threw Craig Richards in with Bivol. You know, I bet with that performance that Bivol gave against Craig Richards, I bet Buatsi's probably thinking, like, shit, maybe I should have been in there.
Maybe. Who knows? Also on that card, is it Lerone Richards? I hope I said that right. Goes up against Giovanni DeCarlos or DeCarlos? How do you say that? Is it Carlos or Carroles?
I would agree with that.
Giovanni De Carroles. I hope I said that right. For the vacant EBU. I don't think I've seen an EBU title in a while.
European title?
Yeah. EBU super middleweight title. What do you think about this matchup?
See, this isn't too bad a fight. You know, I think Lerone Richards will win. I think he's a very good, you know, talented fighter. You know, Giovanni's been on a lot of those Matchroom Italy cards. He's been a kind of a regular performer on there. You know, and he's a lot more experienced than Lerone Richards. But I think Lerone now, with the, you know, over these last few years, being with like SGM Boxing and stuff like that, I think he's come along a lot. I think he's... been in there, had a lot of good spars. I think that Lerone will pick up this, you know, European title, and then I'm sure we'll see him go in for more, you know, the WBA internationals and all those sorts of
things.
To pick up some more points in his rankings. Yeah, I think, you know, he needs to, you know, keep busy. He's a good fighter. I like Lerone. He's a, like, you know, he's a real talented boxer.
I can see that. Maybe it's Giovanni De Carrolls. Maybe it's the Carrolls. It's one of those. Moving on, the news and notes section of the episode. So, what was recently reported by The Athletic, Oscar De La Hoya said that his deal with DAZN, or it was reported that the deal with his Golden Boy Promotions deal with DAZN ends sometime this year, possibly the end of the year or something like that. And he is looking to strike a deal with Triller and get some Golden Boy dates for his fighters over at Triller. Now it really makes sense how he... Golden Boy doesn't have Canelo. They don't have that marquee star to really use as negotiation leverage. So De La Hoya coming and fighting on Triller in these exhibition titles and kind of helping them make money is their negotiation power. You know, he's going to leverage his stardom to get dates for his company. I don't think anybody should be surprised about this. I think when Golden Boy lost Canelo, when that whole situation happened, you know, if anybody says they're surprised about this, that Golden Boy Promotions is likely going to, once the contract is up with DAZN, they're going to leave and they're going to go to whoever else. That's not a surprise at all. you know, but what do you think about this whole situation?
I mean, you could see for a while that, like, how many just Golden Boy shows have we had on DAZN? A handful?
Right.
I mean, Oscar De La Hoya cares about Oscar De La Hoya. Oscar De La Hoya doesn't care about Golden Boy Promotions. If you look at their social media handles and stuff like that compared to PBC, Matchroom, Top Rank, very rarely post. That's why I think, you know, people like Canelo, Ryan Garcia, if I was Virgil Ortiz, I'd be pretty pissed. Very rarely do they get promoted. Don't really do videos for them. Don't really do anything, you know, like get them on game shows or, you know, anything that you see from a lot of, you know, the big, like, you know, look at like Matchroom and Eddie Hearn, you know, like Canelo comes out, Canelo's everywhere, you know, every time there's a fight coming up, you'll see him all over the place, all over IFL TV, all over Sky Sports, all over DAZN, you know, shoulder programming, you know, Matchroom Boxing now do that behind the scenes thing where you just see like the fighters, you know, just,
those are really good too. Those are really good.
Yeah, they're very well made. You know, you can see them like playing games and, you know, talking to the friends and family and stuff like that. You can see them more as, you know, just as a normal person, not just the persona of the fighter. Golden Boy don't do that. They hardly ever post anything. So if you were a fighter for them, you'd be pretty pissed, you know, when you look at what happens in comparison, you know, in other promotions. It just seems like Oscar De La Hoya does a lot of stuff for Oscar De La Hoya rather than for, you know, Golden Boy Promotions. Kind of, I mean, like, like Floyd with Mayweather Promotions.
Right. It's unfortunate because, you know, Golden Boy's been around for a while. Since like the early 2000s, obviously Oscar De La Hoya has been around as a fighter for, you know, a little bit longer than that. Golden Boy Promotions is obviously they're in our area. You know, they're a major promoter who's right here in the LA area. So, and they had, you know, they've had good fighters over the years, you know, Canelo stayed with them. Even when Richard Schaefer took all the fighters to PBC, Canelo stayed. It was like a loyalty thing. You know, we've been to a bunch of Golden Boy fights over the years. We've seen some good fights. You know, they've developed and some great fighters. They haven't really hit like stardom, like a Canelo, but like, I mean, you have a Virgil Ortiz, you have a Jojo Diaz. You had Frankie Gomez before Frankie Gomez just stopped showing up. You know, he had a lot of potential. So it's not like they don't have the eye for talent and stuff like that. It's just, I think the blow that they got when Richard Schaefer left and took all the fighters to PBC is just really bad. Like it's been a very slow recovery, if you want to even call it that, ever since then. And now with Canelo leaving and being with Eddie Hearn the last couple fights, you know, it doesn't look good for them. You know, we hope, obviously as boxing fans, we hope that they stay. We do hope. We hope that they stay and they find a way to kind of rejuvenate their position in boxing. Because, you know, the more, I know a bunch of promoters, they don't want to work together and stuff, but you know, the more promoters, the more competition with each other to sign these guys and stuff like that. You know, it's good for the sport, you know, there's pros and cons to everything, but you know, like I said, it doesn't look good for them. It really doesn't look good. And, especially with De La Hoya saying on record, supposedly, that he's like, yeah, you know, DAZN deals is going to be up. I'm trying to get dates from Triller, you know, like, well, is that something you really want to publicize? Cause like, you know, if this is the first time Triller kind of knows that that's your intentions, well, then doesn't the power kind of go to them in the negotiation table now? Cause they know like, oh, well, now we know why you want to do this. So you're going to have to agree to Arthur. I mean, I can see that. But then De La Hoya is going to leverage his stardom. Like, okay, well, I'm not going to fight for you guys then. You know, you guys need these days for these celebrities or these, you know, these exhibitions. You know, he's leveraging his stardom. Like they leverage Canelo's stardom to get all those DAZN dates and on for all these Golden Boy fighters. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to see Golden Boy fold, you know. The people who say that are obviously like anti, like, oh, they're, if you're a fan of like one individual promoter, like you can recognize when they do good things, like, hey, you know, they got to give them credit. But if you say, oh yeah, I'm a fan of Top Rank, I hate PBC or I hate Golden Boy or I hate Matchroom. Come on, man. You can't do that. You can't be a fan of a promoter. You can recognize when they do great things, and you can criticize when you feel they need to be criticized, you know? So that way, if they hear this, if they're hearing us, if they're hearing the media, I mean, they have their finger on the pulse of the media, then they hear and they're like, hey, you know, we should improve on that. We should improve on that, you know? So, you know, hopefully it, I don't know. It just seems like nobody knows what's going on over there at Golden Boy Promotions. Hopefully they figure it out and they kind of rejuvenate. Cause you're right. Like these guys like Virgil Ortiz and Jojo Diaz and stuff like that. Like they could be secretly pissed off. They're like, hey man, I don't get any promotion over here. And I'm a really good fighter. You know, if they lose like a Virgil Ortiz or any of these guys, and the Oscar De La Hoya, actually the past couple of days has been promoting a lot of stuff on his social media, on his Twitter, especially. I think Beck the Bully, he's posted him, he's posted some other fighters, and he's put like links and stuff. They were actually pretty like well thought out tweets with links, and oh, it's going to be on Facebook Watch or something. If you go to his Twitter handle, he's actually posting. But like you said, I agree. Golden Boy hasn't, if you put them all side by side, you compare them to Top Rank, Matchroom, even PBC, but especially Top Rank and Matchroom, their promotional game, especially on the internet and social media, is levels above all the rest. It really is. So who knows, man? Who knows where this is going to go? Hopefully it doesn't go down the drain. Hopefully they find that spark to rejuvenate and, you know, keep moving forward. But yeah, it doesn't look that good. Also, Yahoo Sports, Kevin Ioli, friend of the show, he's been on the show quite a few times, reports that Triller's Teofimo Lopez and George Kambosos Jr., their pay-per-view will move from June 5th to June 19th. I think it's kind of funny that Teofimo Lopez, when Mayweather and Paul or whoever was reporting their date for their fight, Lopez responded like, oh, you know, I'm on that day or I'm not moving or something like that. And now they're moving it. I mean, I think everybody, that's not surprising from Triller's standpoint, but I think it's funny by how Teofimo Lopez, from his standpoint, how he's like, well, yeah, look, of course they moved it, you know, like he's world renowned and you're not. But what do you think about that news?
As expected, you know, like you said, you know, when Floyd and, you know, Logan Paul and Jake Paul are doing that thing together, the amount of people and eyes that will be on that event, you know, boxing fans and, you know, just general fans of, you know, the YouTube stars, I'm sure it's probably going to sell. So it probably made sense just to move this back 2 weeks so they, you know, they both get some good viewership.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. I can see that, but we'll see. We'll see. Teofimo Lopez is definitely on a high right now, so we'll see how he lands in this fight. I mean, because this isn't, obviously, I think Lopez is rightly the favorite, but Kambosos, you know, I think he's a live dog. I think he's got, you know, any fighter has a chance, but, you know, I think George Kambosos is a hungry fighter. I think he has more of a chance than people think, but who knows? Fury Joshua news. Eddie Hearn says that they're targeting August 7th or August 14th. Saudi Arabia has been mentioned as a possible location. I guess that's the leading candidate. They were saying, I think Eddie Hearn had said that, or Matchroom had said, it might've been Eddie Hearn, that some news was supposed to be announced last week for Fury Joshua, and it didn't get announced. And then people thought, oh, they're going to announce something on Saturday, the day of the Canelo fight. Well, nothing was announced. Tyson Fury was there too. And I was like, oh, Tyson Fury's there. Anthony Joshua couldn't fly over because I think, you know, COVID restrictions or how the airlines are working right now. But, you know, nothing was, I mean, are we just getting dragged along here? Is this going to happen, Mike? What's going on?
Well, Eddie said, I think it was to Boxing Social, that, you know, he would have liked to have made an announcement on Saturday, but due to all the different TVs that are going to be involved in the fight, he didn't want to make the announcement on just DAZN, knowing that, you know, ESPN Plus and everyone else that's involved would be kind of like pissed, like, oh really, you announced the fight just on DAZN, so everybody got all the viewership just on that one channel. So he said it's going to be announced this week. It will be announced before Saturday, before the Manchester show. So I mean, personally, I've said on the show a few times that, you know, I always thought it would go ahead, too much money in the pot for it not to go ahead. Slightly different than the Mayweather and Pacquiao fight, because
yeah,
they're, you know, we're kind of like younger, and they could kind of drag that on and on, and it was gonna, you know, with the heavyweights, you know, just kind of go into you know, they could go into one fight, kind of get badly knocked out, and you know, the pot kind of disappeared. Whereas the Pacquiao and Mayweather fight, they went on and went on and went on, and the pot grew substantially from like 60 million to like 300 or 400 million. So, you know, in hindsight, you know, Mayweather was right.
I think it kind of sucks that this fight's going to be in Saudi Arabia, or a lot of these fights are going to Saudi Arabia. Obviously, the Middle East and that general area, they're coughing up a lot of money for these site fees and to these promoters. So it's like, it's hard to turn away. But do you think that even if there was no pandemic, because obviously the pandemic affects this fight being like at a Wembley Stadium or anywhere else over there in the UK. But do you think if there was no pandemic, do you think this fight would still land in Saudi Arabia?
Yeah.
Really? Man.
I think the first fight would have always landed in Saudi Arabia, because it would, unless the UK randomly came up with a 150 million site fee.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the first one would have always been, you know, in Saudi Arabia. And kind of weirdly, luckily, Eddie kind of gets to use the COVID excuse. Like, oh, you know, we probably, you know, we would have done it in the UK, you know, 90,000 at Wembley, but, you know, due to COVID, we can't. So
that's probably why they're going to try to make it as soon as they can. So that way they can use that as the excuse, like, hey, we would have done it in the UK, but the pandemic restrictions, because I think you're right. I think if there was no pandemic, I think they still would have done it in Saudi Arabia, as long as Saudi Arabia coughed up that big old site fee.
It'd be interesting to see, because they always spoke about doing two, didn't they? It was originally going to be July and then like November or December. So with this now being August.
And then early next year?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Do you think we'll see maybe like a New Year's Eve one would be good?
That'd be huge. I don't think it's going to be that quick, but
kind of follow the Japanese, where they always do a huge fight on New Year's Eve.
I would say maybe first quarter of 2022. You know, if they fight in August, first quarter of 2022, at least by April, I would say, but who knows. But Eddie Hearn says this week it makes sense with the whole television networks are all involved. He doesn't want to get in trouble by announcing it on one. I get it. You know, put these guys on all these television shows, man, especially in the UK, like let them get press for it. You know, they both have good personalities. They could talk, especially Fury, you know, he doesn't mince his words, but who knows? But hopefully we get an announcement of that by the end of this week. So once again, our big thanks actually to Christopher One Shot Lovejoy, who fights Manuel Char. At least as of now, he fights Manuel Char this Saturday, unless Don King steps in. Because I think if the fight doesn't happen, I think the next fight that Christopher Lovejoy has to go after is against Don King. So Don King versus Christopher Lovejoy in 2021, because if you look at it this way, Don King would be 2-0 against Christopher Lovejoy, you know, going into their fight, you know, stopping the fight against Dave Allen and then potentially stopping the fight this weekend. Don King's 2-0 against Christopher Lovejoy, but we'll see. But big thanks to him for joining us, giving a couple minutes of his time here on the Last Round. And as we wrap up here, go ahead, Mike, and let people know where they can follow us.
We're at the Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter. And obviously, join us next week. We'll be previewing the big undisputed fight at 140 between Jose Ramirez and Josh Taylor. And also, that week, we'll be heading to Vegas. So we'll be getting you some weigh-in shows and review shows from Vegas in the hotels.
Great fight. That's a fight I'm looking forward to a lot. You talk about hardcore boxing fans fight. That's definitely it. You know, definitely Jose Ramirez and Josh Taylor will definitely preview it next week. So for once again, for my co-host, Michael Shepherd, I'm Danny Z. This is the Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is the Last Round Podcast.